A week later, Hindenburg abolished the Weimar national flag, which was replaced by the swastika banner and a black, white and red temporary national flag. There were daily parades, mass meetings, declarations of gratitude for the liberation of the nation, military music from dawn to dusk, awards ceremonies for heroes, the dedication of flags, and, as a final climax, the tasteless display of the Day of Potsdam, with the traitor Hindenburg visiting the grave of Frederick the Great, Hitler swearing loyalty to something or other for the nth time, bells tolling, a solemn procession to church by the members of the Reichstag, a military parade, swords lowered in salute, children waving flags, and a torchlight parade. The colossal emptiness and lack of meaning of these never-ending events was by no means unintentional. The population should become used to cheering and jubilation, even when there was no visible reason for it. It was reason enough that people who distanced themselves too obviously, were daily and nightly tortured to death with steel whips and electric drills. Better to celebrate, howl with the wolves, heil, heil! Besides, people began to enjoy doing so. The weather in March 1933 was glorious. Was it not wonderful to celebrate in the spring sunshine, in squares decked with flags, to merge with the festive crowds and listen to high-sounding patriotic speeches about freedom and fatherland, exaltation and holy vows? It was certainly better than having one's belly pumped up with a water hose in some hidden SA cellar. People began to join in, at first mostly from fear. After they had participated, they no longer wanted to do so just from fear. That would have been mean and contemptible. So the necessary ideology was also supplied. That was the spiritual basis of the victory of the National Socialist Revolution. True, something further was necessary to achieve all this. That was the cowardly treachery of all party and organizational leaders, to whom the 56% of the population who had voted against the Nazis on March the 5th had entrusted themselves. This terrible and decisive event was not much noticed by the outside world. Naturally, the Nazis had no interest in drawing attention to it, since it would considerably devalue their victory. And as for the traitors themselves, well, of course, they did not want attention drawn to it. Nevertheless, it is finally only this betrayal that explains the almost inexplicable fact that a great nation, which cannot have consisted entirely of cowards, fell into ignominy without a fight. The betrayal was complete, extending from left to right. I have already described how, behind their facade of being ready and prepared for civil war, the communists were preparing only for the emigration of their leading members. What of the social democratic leadership? Their betrayal of their faithful and blindly loyal millions of followers, for the most part decent, unimportant individuals, had begun on July the 20th, 1932, when Severing and Gusinski yielded to greater force. They had fought the election campaign of 1933 in a dreadfully humiliating way, chasing after the Nazi slogans and emphasizing that they were also nationalist. On March the 4th, a day before the elections, their strong man, the Prussian Prime Minister Otto Braun, drove across the Swiss frontier. He had prudently bought a small house in Ticino. In May, a month before they were finally dissolved, the Social Democratic faction in the Reichstag had unanimously expressed their confidence in Hitler and joined in the singing of the Horst Wessel song, the Nazi anthem. The official parliamentary report noted, "Unending applause and cheers in the House and the galleries. The Reichschancellor turns to the Social Democratic faction and applauds." The great middle-class Catholic party Zentrum, which in the last few years had attracted the backing of more and more middle-class Protestants, had already fallen in March. It was this party that supplied the votes necessary for the two-thirds majority that legalized Hitler's dictatorship. In this, it followed its leader, the ex-Reich Chancellor Brüning. This is frequently forgotten abroad, and Brüning is still considered as a possible replacement for Hitler. Believe me, it is not forgotten in Germany. A man who, even on March the 23rd, 1933, thought it tactically justifiable to procure for Hitler the votes of his party on a decisive issue, has ruled himself out forever there. Finally, the German nationalists, the right-wing conservatives who venerated honour and heroism as the central characteristics of their programme. Oh God, what an infinitely dishonourable and cowardly spectacle their leaders made in 1933, and continued to make afterward. One might at least have expected that, once their claim in January proved illusory, that they had tamed the Nazis and rendered them harmless, they would act as a brake and prevent the worst. Not a bit of it. They went along with everything. The terror, the persecution of Jews, the persecution of Christians. They were not even bothered when their own party was prohibited and their own members arrested. Socialist officials who abandon their party members and voters are a dismal enough sight, but what is one to say of aristocratic officers such as Herr von Papen, who stand by when their nearest friends and associates are shot and who remain in office and shout, "Heil Hitler!" As the parties, so the leagues. There was the League of Communist Frontline Veterans, and a centrist association called Reichsbanner, with a black, red and gold flag, the colours of the Weimar Republic. It was organised on military lines by a coalition of parties, including the Social Democrats, had arms and millions of members, and was explicitly intended to hold the SA in check. During the whole period, this association remained completely invisible, not a glimmer. It disappeared without trace, as though it had never existed. Resistance in Germany only took the form of individual acts of desperation, as in the case of the trade union official in Köpenick. The officers of the Reichsbanner showed not the slightest opposition when their facilities were taken over by the SA.